Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to Lost in the Static, everybody. As always, I'm Scott. With me is Josh.
You're always Scott?
I'm always Scott. I've tried to be different things, but I'm always Scott.
Oh, damn. Okay, well, whatever. Yeah, I'm Josh. Hey, hey, Scott, since that's you, where would people go if they want a really nice sex toy that they might get a really great deal on?
You know, I've heard of this place called AdamandEve.com.
Funny.
Somewhere.
Do you have to do anything special to get, like, a good deal?
Well, from what I understand, when you're checking out, if you enter the promo code STATIC, and just in case you're a bad speller, that's S-A-T. S-A-T? See?
No. Told you.
That's really, really
you're
bad.
A bad speller.
That's right. C-O-W-E-I-E-I-O. And that's S-T-A-T-I-C. Enter the code STATIC when you're checking out. You help me and Josh keep the lights on, literally, especially in this time of year when there is no freaking work for either one of us. And then not only that, but you get 50% off of a product.
And then they'll even cover the shipping
yep.
in the U.S.
And 3 free DVDs.
And they'll even throw you a mystery gift.
Mystery gift.
Promo code STATIC. And you can also go to 1201beyond.com. There's the store where you can buy Lost in the Static t-shirts or
that's
t-shirts
right.
any other 1201 Beyond show.
And I have to give you credit on the designs. Those shirts are sharp.
They are very good.
They're yes. very nice looking shirts.
And then there is also, if you go to 1201beyond.com, there is the Amazon links that you don't get anything special. But if you go through those links, if you're going to Amazon or Amazon UK, we get a little kick.
We get a tiny little cut. And
he does mean tiny.
And you get a nice warm feeling that you're helping me and Josh out. And if you want to donate directly for any particular reason, I shouldn't say donate. I like tip. Tip. If you want to send us a tip.
If you want to help, the email address is the same one as the contact email address, 1201beyond@gmail.com.
Yep, you can just do it right through PayPal. Makes it nice and easy.
And it really, we need help. But
like I said, there's no work. I was going over my work schedule. I have 6 hours
you're
over
like,
the next
free,
2 weeks.
Free work.
Over the next 2 weeks, I have 6 hours of work. It's, oh.
So would what we just did destroy any kind of journalistic integrity that we might have pretended at some point that we had?
No, because we're honest. And I have a feeling that even though they're a sponsor and they've been a sponsor for a long while and we really like them, If Adam and Eve got embroiled.
Would that be the menage a trois with God?
Exactly.
Adam and yeah, Eve's, Adam oh yeah. Eve's.
That's
every man's fantasy, right?
That's the way the Bible intended it right there.
wow, that was creepy.
Yes, it was. But I have a feeling that if they got embroiled in some sort of controversy, that we would still cover it and cover it fairly. We wouldn't, you know... We've been honest when we've talked about them before, when we've gone over adult film and distribution and stuff like that, where we go, hey, they're a sponsor. We appreciate their sponsorship. Here's what's going on. And I have a feeling that if they were embroiled in a controversy of some sort, we would still honestly right up front go, hey, they're a sponsor, but blah.
Exactly.
Whatever blah happened to be.
I would actually have to read our contract with them to know if there's like a disparagement thing in there or not. I would actually have to read all the legalese to see about that. But.
Yeah, but to tell you the truth, even if there was, if we lose them as a sponsor, we would lose them as a sponsor.
Yeah.
We have to tell the truth. That's part
do
of what we
do. Do you think that's becoming more rare today? Because what I have noticed in news, in print journalism, in video journalism, even in blogging, is people are more concerned with keeping the sponsor than they are about telling the whole story.
In many cases, I think you're right. I think that there is still some journalistic integrity out there, you know, especially on the local news. I've seen local.
I might argue with you on that.
I have seen.
You and I have both seen the behind the scenes.
We have
of
both
some
seen
of those.
The behind the scenes of some of those, and I've seen the good and the bad, and I have seen local news people go, oh, by the way, this place is a sponsor, but
I have also
you and I have also been privy to the news meeting where we've had the news director go, oh, I don't know, they just bought a bunch of spots.
Yeah,
we shouldn't cover that.
We shouldn't badmouth them.
Yeah.
I remember one Taco John's. I don't know if that's a nationwide chain or if that's just
regional. I don't know.
Okay, well, but anyway. It's like a Taco Bell for poor people. If Taco Bell itself is not the poor people, Taco Bell.
I was going to say, tell you the truth, I think Taco John's is a little bit better quality than Taco Bell.
Not with the story that I'm going to fucking iterate here.
Okay, go ahead.
They got caught with a whole bunch of health violations here in Green Bay, and they were shut down for a while. And our station, the one, I'm not going to say which one it was, but the one I worked at the time, didn't want to cover it because Taco John's was a big, big advertiser.
Yes.
They eventually did cover it when all the other stations in the market were, and it became obvious that the public would go, you're not covering this, but you're still running all their damn commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was... They kind of got browbeat into actually being journalists.
Yeah, and luckily that's a rare thing. At least on, I think when it comes to most local news, I up here, the two stations that I've worked for up here, obviously the one that we worked for together, I saw it quite a bit. I hate to say that. The other one that I worked for, it was most often, it was precede this with a warning. These folks are a sponsor, but. And then the stations that I worked for in Evansville, which, funny, doing a little bit of research, I found out that they used to be huge rivals because I interned at Fox and I worked at the ABC station down there. Well, they're both owned by the same company now. So they work together, and if you go to
it's kind of funny here. The Fox and the CW are owned by the same company, and they used to be big programming rivals with one another. Oh, you know, 10 years ago.
But neither here nor there. I have actually seen, you know, that discussion came up for a split second. It was, hey, I've got this story on, and there is no real story. I'm just going to pick it out because they were a local restaurant that I liked. I've got this story on Rally's, and Rally's they've been serving rat instead of hamburger for whatever, you know, and Rally's happened to be a big sponsor. So it was a matter of the news director calling sales and going, hey, you're going to want to get in touch with Rally's. We have
get in
this,
front of this.
We have some stories. Go ahead and call them now. I'm going to run this at 5. Sales coming in and going, no. And the news director kind of going, middle finger?
the big one I remember was, I can't say the company legally, but the parent company of one of the stations that I worked for, they got into some legal snafus in another state, and it was starting to become national news.
Yes.
And it was, this is the parent company. You do not report this. You can let the Fox station do it. You can let the other stations do it. You do not report this. And it was like, wow, that's just, I said to one of the main anchors, you're not a real journalist anymore, are you? And she got pissed at me. It's like, no, you're suggesting brand loyalty over the news. At that point, to me, you're not a journalist anymore.
Yeah, that's you're
the truth should be what you seek, not I want to keep my job.
Yeah. And I mean, I can understand, for instance, WHT's reaction to our fictional Rally's story. I can understand their reaction of calling sales and going, hey, get in front of this. There was never a question of, should we run this?
It's just, we're giving you a heads
up. We're giving you a heads up. You're going to want to get in front of this. You're going to want to deal with this. There's probably going to be fallout. And that used to be the standard. I will agree with you. There used to be that there was absolutely no question that that's how it would go. And more, recently I've seen it called into question of, should we even run this? You know, let's say here in town, it's absolutely no no hidden fact that TMJ4 down in
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee is owned by, TMJ stands for the Milwaukee Journal. And so the paper and the TV news work together a lot. And I've seen it where the Milwaukee Journal company would get into some sort of issue, and you would have TMJ4 either going, well, this is, you know, to be fair, this is our parent company, but here's the story. But I always see them run those kind of stories last.
After everyone's
after
tuned
every,
out.
Not necessarily after everyone's tuned out. I'm not talking about stacking order here. I'm talking about Fox has covered it, and NBC has covered it, and blah, 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 has covered it, and finally TMJ4 gets around to it and goes, well, me.
Well, now, the one of the reasons I want to bring this up, there's some entertainment stuff I want to talk about with entertainment journalism, but also, this is big news again with the whole CBS Benghazi fallout. And I'm not going to make this a what the fuck episode. We're not going to get into the politics of Benghazi.
Right.
But what basically happened was CBS got one of the mercenaries that was there at Benghazi, and I'm putting there in quotes here, okay, to talk on camera, and they got an exclusive first interview, and they put it on the air before they verified that the guy was lying through his fucking ass.
Yeah.
He wasn't there. His account doesn't match any of the facts, and the government is able to prove he could not have seen what he is claiming to have seen.
If I remember right, he was in another country at the time.
He was traveling to the Benghazi incident. But the point is that CBS was... journalistic integrity comes into question when it's, should we verify this? Would we rather be first or be right? CBS decided we'd rather be first.
Yeah, for me, it's two. There are two major questions when it comes to journalistic integrity. One is, should we even report on this because they're a sponsor, or can they pay us to put this under the rug, so to speak? And that's big question number one. We've talked about that, and that is being seen more and more often. The other one is, and I think that this is a fault of choice, and I'll get to that in a minute, but. The other one was, should we be first? Should we be right? And sometimes it comes down to that, you know, can anybody verify if I come out and suddenly say, hey, there's been new footage from the moon and we've discovered that the moon is actually, made up of pink cotton candy. And I go on the air like this and nobody verifies it, and I present it as truth, then there's our first versus right deal. And that kind of thing can have long, long lasting effects.
Oh yeah. I'm going to get into that in a little bit.
The first thing that comes to my mind for the long, long lasting effects is the controversy over childhood immunizations. We had this scientist who
now has admitted that he doctored all the results, yeah, and they were total bullshit.
A few years ago, he goes, look, I didn't even really do any research. I just kind of
made it up to be controversial. And
wrote this and published it. And part of scientific journalism is peer review. That obviously takes some time. So a couple of years go by where he presents it as fact, and people like Jenny McCarthy and some other
airheads
jump on board and go, oh my God, don't immunize your kids against these diseases because it causes autism. And now the scientific community, the community at large, is having to fight against that information and go, no, they don't cause autism. This is stupid. You should immunize your kids because of herd immunity, which is a real thing. And we have adults and kids getting diseases like whooping cough and measles, and more importantly, dying from diseases like
because
whooping cough
and
measles
like Jenny
because
McCarthy.
Of idiots like Jenny McCarthy and other idiots in the journalistic community that went, oh my God, a scientist wrote this. It must be true.
I am a true scientist.
Yeah, you know.
But then let me ask you then this kind of follow-up. Then what about when let's say other stations followed the CBS's Benghazi story, okay? And they jumped on it without actually going, we're going to look into this guy and see if this is bullshit or not. What I've seen, especially in the local market, is you have follow the leader. Well, the CBS affiliate said this, so now the ABC affiliate's going to copy because they assume the CBS affiliate did it. Then the Fox affiliate's going to copy because he sees the ABC and CBS affiliate.
Well, they both
doing
obviously
it.
Check their facts. You know?
Yeah. So you get that. And how many times, especially in a national like MSNBC, Fox News, and all that, have you seen a story that's patently false be reported as fact by all of these stations? Because each one thought the other one did the legwork to verify it, and it's like a cascade effect.
Yeah, and
because I don't think being a journalist is that they were a journalist, so I'm going to just trust them, right?
Yeah, that's bad journalism. That's bad journalism, and I remember, you know, going to college for journalism. It was. The teacher put a bunch of headlines up on the board and said, okay, you're in charge of a newspaper, because they were still relevant at the time. You're in charge of a newspaper. What headline do you run with? And, you know, other kids were kind of ordering them in facts and whatnot. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, I don't remember exactly what they were, but there was one that just went, that got first or second billing. And I was just like, that doesn't seem right. And I remember asking the teacher, and I went, are these all real headlines? And more importantly, are they true? And she goes, nope, 4 out of 5 of them were complete falsehoods that were run by newspapers, and they happened to be the top 4. And other kids were just assuming they were true because they were printed.
A newspaper ran them.
Yeah, you know, they were printed. Oh, it's in print. It must be true. It's on the air. It must be true. It's on the internet. It must be true.
Well, I don't think anyone really believes that.
Oh, I know plenty of people that do, and they forward emails all the time. Like, Obama wants to...
Obama's a Muslim. Yeah.
Obama's a Muslim. Obama was born in Kenya. Let's see here. He wants... They're going to have death panels for
the Sarah Palin years.
Yeah, you know, this is...
But, okay, that's what we think of as news. Now, you and I kind of argued about this a little bit before the show. You don't seem to consider entertainment journalism to be journalism.
No. Don't put those words in my mouth. I said it is a type of journalism. It's not hard journalism. It's not... It's soft journalism.
It's strangely easier to corrupt.
Look at these stupid idiots doing this stupid stuff. Most of it is.
You know, because remember the Kanan Lynch video game fiasco?
Yeah, fill me in here.
GameSpot.com, one of the biggest video game review and peer websites that was on the net, they became Kanan Lynchified for a month. You know, the banners everywhere, whatever the company, BioWare, whatever it was that put out the Kanan Lynch 2, was everywhere, all over that site. And then the review of the game came out, and it was just meh. It was a 5 out of 10.
5, 7, 10
and
average.
And then all of a sudden, a bunch of their editorial staff quit. And you went, Turned out that the publisher of Kanan Lynch said, we bought all these ads. We assumed that meant a good review was forthcoming. GameSpot said, we're sorry. We will take care of this. We will get you a good review. The editorial staff said, no. Our review's not for sale. The game is just average. It's not good. It's not bad. I'm not giving it a great review because you told me to. And they walked out.
Sure.
So because they had integrity. GameSpot said, no, these guys spent thousands of dollars on ads. You're giving them a good review.
Well, you gave me an even better example outside while we were discussing this, and that was Fangoria.
Fangoria magazine, they call themselves First in Fear since 1979.
Sure.
They have no artistic integrity whatsoever. And with the current Chris Alexander scandal, I don't think anyone would expect them to.
So what is up with the Chris Alexander scandal?
Chris Alexander is their managing editor, okay? And he made a movie called Blood for Irina. Now, Blood for Irina got a really great review in Fangoria by some writer named Ben Cortman. And what happened was Ben Cortman gave this great review without ever kind of saying, you know, this is made by our editor-in-chief. It's composed by our editor-in-chief. Ben Cortman was a pseudonym used by Chris Alexander. He reviewed his own movie as an impartial third party in his own magazine to try and get you to go and see his movie.
Now, you talk to somebody about this and other journalistic integrity issues, right?
Yes. In the entertainment industry, I talked to former Fangoria writer Dave Pace, who has made it his job now to expose all these kind of things in his blog, La Psychotronique. And I spoke with him, and we're going to play that right now.
Tell us a little bit about the most recent example of journalistic integrity going out the window with Fangoria Magazine and the Chris Alexander debacle.
Yeah, I mean, it's a kind of a sad event, but what we found is that Chris Alexander, the editor-in-chief of Fangoria Magazine, was promoting his own film in his own magazine. You know, one could make arguments about whether that's a good idea or not, but the added sort of icing on the cake is that he did so using a pseudonym. So he kind of concealed the writer's hidden relationship with the film. You know, kind of gave readers the impression that this independent person named Ben Cortman, you know, had these opinions about the film and thought the film was like a Jess Franco movie, and sort of had these very glowing words of praise for the film. Written and directed by Chris Alexander, the music in the film, which was composed and performed by Chris Alexander, so on and so forth. He even kind of interviews himself, kind of surreal when you wrap your head around it. This came to light, you know, was brought to my attention by a source. So I chased it down. I kind of had a look at the issue in question. You know, I ran down the issue in question. I looked at the article, the byline. I went and talked to some people that I knew in the business just about, you know, hey, did you know, you know, can you confirm to me that that Chris did use the pen name Ben Cortman when he was a writer? He used to write for Remorque. So I managed to get in touch with some of his colleagues and former editors and found out that, yes, he did, in fact, use that that pen name. Turns out I didn't need to do all that confirmation because he just came out and admitted it.
That was the part that got me, that he admitted it, but his attitude was sort of a, yeah, we all do this, so what?
Yeah, I this is definitely a case where the cover-up is worse than the crime, right? So the night before I ran the piece, I emailed Chris, and I asked him if he'd like to talk to me about Ben Cortman and who Ben Cortman was. And Chris didn't answer my email. It was maybe not surprising. But that all could have ended right there. This whole thing kind of could have been put to bed, you know, wrap a neat bow around it if Chris had gotten back in his comment and said, yeah, you know what? You caught me. I'm Ben Cortman. Yeah, I wrote about my own movie. Here's why. You're right. It was the wrong thing to do. Won't do it again. Sorry to disappoint. And you know, that could have been sort of one day's news. But he took a very different course. So as opposed to responding to my request for comment, he took to Facebook and went after me pretty hard. And in doing so, just completely confessed. Like, I mean, he spends about 18 paragraphs, you know, enumerating my my many failures and foibles as a human being and as a writer, and then goes on to confirm that, yeah, well, when what I'm saying is 100% true, he 100% wrote that article himself. He is Ben Cortman, and yeah, he wrote and promoted his own movie. And if you got a problem with that, take it up with him. It was a surprising move. I think what surprised me the most about it was just how kind of tone deaf he was on how people might receive that.
Are you surprised that he still has his job after this?
No, I'm not surprised. I will say, without question, I think if Chris Alexander were the editor of USA Today and had done this, or the editor of, you know, any other, you know, sort of mainstream publication, he'd be cleaning out his desk and going home. And I don't think he would have necessarily been pushed to do so. I think there would have been a resignation forthcoming. There wasn't in Chris's case. And, you know, whether that's right or wrong is a subject people can debate. I don't think he deserves to lose his job over it. I just think he needs to change his behavior. I think he needs to have a bit more respect for his audience, because I think that's the thing that he really didn't seem to understand and doesn't seem to understand now is what the core of the issue is. And the core of the issue is not that he writes with a pseudonym. You can't really fault him for that. All kinds of writers, you know, use pseudonyms and do it for whatever their reasons are for doing it. But the issue is with him using the pseudonym to promote his own work in his own magazine without letting the audience know who he is, without disclosing that relationship. That's the key issue. I don't think he displayed a very good understanding of that issue when he responded to it the day I published that article. I still don't think he displays a very good understanding of what the central issue is. Whether he does understand or not, I don't know. But he's certainly not displaying a good understanding.
Do you think, though, that this is indicative of Fangoria in general? And yes, I do have some bias against Fangoria, but let's face it, the magazine is not what it used to be. Do you think that people just don't expect journalistic integrity from Fangoria anymore? Or do you think that Fangoria's owners should have taken him to task and said, you just pissed away the last 5 years we've been trying to build our integrity back up. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see this as necessarily a Fangoria problem. Obviously, a problem that Fangoria is grappling with right now. And I definitely think there's conditions at Fangoria that contributed to this. There's a very small crew of people running that ship, and they work immensely hard to do what they do. So it's on one hand, a lot of my displeasure, I guess you would call it, towards Fangoria isn't directed so much at Chris, or wasn't at least directed so much at Chris as the publisher, Tom DeFeo. I had always sort of felt that he was holding a lot back and that he was not putting the resources into the magazine that were needed to do things smoothly and to do things like any other sane publication would be able to do. You know, it just, I'm trying to be very careful here.
It's understandable.
I think that people's expectations about Fangoria are low. I think people's expectations about horror media and genre media in general are low. I don't understand why. And I wish that were different. And that's exactly why I'm sort of doing what I'm doing. You know, I'm trying to get people on board this train that says we can do better, and there's, you know, we should expect better. Supposed to be best in class magazines, right? These are supposed to be best in class publications, and I think they need to be displaying best in class business practices and best in class journalistic ethics. And when they aren't, people need to say something about it. Is Fangoria suffering under Chris's leadership? A lot has been said about the contributions that he's made to the magazine, how it's infinitely better than it was previously. And I don't think you can argue against that. I have a copy on my desk. I keep it, of Fangoria issue 238, which is the issue with the New Moon Twilight cover. And I've kept that around for a long time to just like remind me, this is what can happen to you. This is the, you know,
when you lose your direction.
Absolutely. And so that's where things were before Alexander. So if you want to look at it as a continuum and you look at, okay, where were things before Alexander? Where are things now? It's infinitely better. Where are things between Fangoria with Alexander and a magazine that is living up to that first in fear since 1979, best in class kind of attitude and best in class expectations? There's some room for improvement. You know, they've got a ways to go. I mean, is that the fault of individuals? Yeah, there's probably some individuals who aren't helping. Is that the fault of the publisher to some extent? Definitely. I don't think that the resources are being put in place to let everybody do what they're good at and excel. Ultimately, it's also about fans not having higher expectations, right?
Do you think that has something to do with the Spider Baby fallout? I'm not going to go into the Leon Spider Baby plagiarism thing because that's been done to death. But Chris Alexander and even Tim Lucas, an editor and writer that I've respected for years.
Yeah, me too.
They both put their careers wrongly on the line to immediately go, no, 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 she plagiarized nothing. And then they went and looked into it and went, oh, shit. Do you think that hurts the journalistic integrity when, rather than look at the story before responding, they just lashed out and said, no, 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 you're all haters?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a real troubling aspect to this that, you know, the plagiarism was one thing that I think that's one part of the story. And I think that's really inconsequential at this point. I think what is of consequence is looking at the timeline of what happened after. So you have a whistleblower sending out emails to the editors of every publication she worked for. There's crickets. All the evidence was laid out for them. They didn't have to look hard for it. It was all right there in the email. Everything they needed to do to either draw a conclusion or do the investigation required to draw a conclusion was handed to them on the silver platter. If you look how outlets reacted, very interesting. You know, it was just things just started to go down the memory hole, right? Everything just kind of starts to disappear and nobody really comes out and says, you know, this is a problem. We're sorry. And you didn't have anybody making statements or anything like that. It was all very quiet.
I think it actually got worse than that, though. When you saw people not making statements and then scrubbing her articles off of their website and then still not responding, that clued me in that they're just trying to make this go away.
Yeah, of course. Fearnet right away just started pulling her articles. And to this day, Fearnet has not commented on why they did so. They haven't commented on the scandal. They haven't commented on any of it. So they really escaped kind of unscathed. In a way, their not speaking was kind of the wiser choice, because nobody's, you know, berating the editors at Fearnet for their role in this, and perhaps they should. So Fearnet, I'll be emailing you later. The really interesting thing is when then Mike White publishes his story, and all of a sudden it's undeniable, and nobody can really say anything about it. It's out there and it's real. And now all of a sudden people have to react, and this sort of panic set in. And that's when you had Lucas making his just really disappointing remarks. And that really, like, they really upset me. And then you had Chris weighed in with his remarks, which I think were more on point than Lucas's. But still, ultimately, kind of, there's nothing to see here. And that wasn't the mood. And I think it was a really critical misread of the mood that from both Tim Lucas and Chris Alexander, they didn't understand what the public sentiment was going to be. They didn't realize how angry people would be, how outraged people would be, and then where the questions were going to lead next. I mean, how they didn't see looking into their business practices happening next as a result of this, I can't comprehend, because to me, that was the next logical question, is why did this happen?
And to me, the follow-up to that would be, and I'm not going to go into the plagiarism itself, but how did the editors not notice that the tone of her writing was all over the place, including, because of her cutting and pasting, the obvious sentence structure errors? How did those get printed without any of these editors going, that doesn't seem right, I should question Leanne about this?
Absolutely. And you know, that's where this gets scary, because let's be real. This is becoming about personality and about fame. And I'm not even talking like big capital F fame. I'm just talking, you know, lowercase f, you know, I got a 1,000 friends on Facebook kind of fame. You know what I mean? Like there's people just chasing that. And hammering away at that. And all of a sudden that's what all this stuff becomes about. And you've got someone so driven to succeed that this is what they're doing. They're just ripping people off left, right, and center. And they're so good at marketing themselves in social media. And suddenly that skill is so much more important than actually being a good writer. Suddenly your ability to attract an audience and your ability to sort of make a spectacle of yourself and bring people around to your personal brand and, you know, all these ideas that people have now, that becomes more valuable than actually being a good writer and actually having interesting things to say about what you're writing about. Unfortunately, when you're a struggling operation, you know, like a lot of these publications are, they're having a hard time these days. Having good content is wonderful, but if nobody's reading the good content, so what? You're not making any money.
Because I can tell you from when I work with the editors at Hustler, they will take me to task for every single word they don't like. they rightly read so. At all.
Rightly so, because that's the
Hustler.
Job. Well, and Hustler knows the job, because that's the job, right? I mean, this is what it's about. The job is not convention appearances and introducing, you know, shows and all this. It's not about any of that. It's about writing, and it's about quality writing, and it's about quality content. And that's all sort of getting lost, because some of these publications are just pursuing what they think is going to be popular, or what is popular, what people are doing. So I also think if we got to look at what's wrong, we got to look at what's wrong with the audience. What's wrong with an audience that accepted Leanne's work as something that spread like wildfire? Like she was just, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like
it. She was on fire for a while there.
Absolutely she was. Her name was everywhere. You could not do a thing without running into her. It was unbelievable. Looking back, it's all smoke and mirrors, right? It's this very carefully constructed dog and pony show, and there's no substance to it. That's frightening. I don't think that bodes well for the future of this stuff. And so, you know, it's frightening. It's just a bad scene. It's a bad scene.
Do you know what I think they should have done? What Fangoria, Famous Monsters, Fearnet, and all them should have done is they should have gone to all the writers Leanne ripped off and given them her job.
Absolutely.
That would have been the true white knight, because then they would have come out looking like shining examples of journalistic integrity, wouldn't they have?
Yeah. I mean, there was a real large missed opportunity. The missed opportunity was really to first, neither of them really seemed to acknowledge the people who were stolen from. Or acknowledge them in kind of a weird, like, you're not really the victim here, we are, like Tim Lucas did in that editorial. It was very strange. It was like, well, your good names are still intact. And then I argued with Lucas about this on Chris Alexander's Facebook, you know, when the Gawker story was published on all this. And he was saying the same thing then. He was telling people that, oh, well, the authors, you know, that were stolen from, they're not really out anything, so they're not really victims here. You know, they still have their good names and their whatever else, and just seem totally oblivious to the idea that people would be really upset that they were stolen from and that somebody profited from their work.
Do you think that this lack of journalistic integrity in this field, whether it be about plagiarism or writing a review of your own movie or whatever, is just sort of accepted now, like what happened to the Dark Side magazine back in 2004, where they were plagiarizing reviews and they eventually went bankrupt, but then they just came back? From what I can tell, that's the same people. They just said, we'll wait 5 years and this goes away.
Yeah, well, I mean, it comes right back to audiences not expecting more. If we had, And I don't want to blame the victims here, because they're the victims and the enablers at the same time, unfortunately. And it's audiences who are not expecting the best from best in class publications, right? It's these things wouldn't happen. And these things also wouldn't happen if there was a better functioning media going on within the genre media, right? I mean, everybody is very afraid to say anything about anyone else. Everybody's very afraid to call someone out for behavior, to call people out for things that they're doing. There's a very strong sense that nobody wants to burn bridges. Nobody wants to upset people. Nobody wants to rock the boat, because who knows? You know, there's all this, people want to preserve their access to certain people. People want to preserve their whatever, right? They're protecting themselves. So you've got a culture which really isn't expecting accountability from itself and acting accordingly. And so what else do you think is going to happen? You know, if nobody's there to say, Hey, what's going on here? Yeah, of course it's going to happen. You know, the reason that mainstream media functions the way it does, and I'm not saying it functions well, but there's at least people willing to, you know, call out behavior. There's people at least willing to say, hey, what you did is not correct, you know, or we're going to report on what these people are doing in an effort to keep them on the path, right? To keep them on that straight and narrow. You're not there for the studios. You're not there to help them. You're not there to promote them. You're not there to work for them. You're there to work for your readers.
I'm not so sure I'd say that about Tom DeFeo with the Starlog and Fangoria. I've always seen both of those publications as glorified press release magazines.
Well, and a lot of, you know, I'll say a lot of that content. Yeah, it is. You know, a lot of that content is on, it's unfortunate. And I think it can be better. And I think it should be better. There's no reason it can't. What's keeping it from being better is probably a lot of laziness and probably a lot of, not laziness, I don't think on the part of people who work at Fangoria or any of these publications, because they work hard. I think it's laziness on the part of a lot of writers. A lot of writers don't want to work hard. They don't want to do anything more difficult than rewriting a press release.
That's unfortunate. You know,
it's totally unfortunate.
So that was Dave Pace. And as you guys can see, he's an actual journalist. He didn't go public with anything until he verified this stuff. In the Chris Alexander case, it was a little easier because after he was caught, Chris didn't do what we thought he was going to do. He pulled the opposite. Instead of going, no, I'm not Ben Cortman, he pulled a, yeah, I'm Cortman, so? Yeah, I wrote my own review, so what? And as the editor of the magazine, doesn't the fact that he still has his job kind of shock you?
It really is amazing to me. Any publication other than Fangoria, I'll be honest and right up front here, I lost respect for Fangoria at some point in the 1990s while I was working.
That's pretty much when everyone lost respect for Fangoria.
And to tell you the truth, I don't think that they have been a relevant source of news or anything of interest for at least 20 years now. But
see, that's the most damaging thing, that they had for about the past 5 years been trying to reclaim their credibility in the horror field. And then this just pissed it all away yet again.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible. And I'm kind of amazed that this editor still has his job, but I'm also kind of amazed that Fangoria is still being published.
Really?
As awful
Starlog's
as that sounds.
Not. Starlog is an internet-only magazine now.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm kind of amazed that Starlog is paying anybody anymore because it's not that they lost integrity. They've just kind of ceased to matter.
The internet did hurt a lot of them. But yeah. Sticking with the entertainment journalism, what about things like The Inquirer? Or even, we'll go back to The Inquirer. What about, do you remember Cinema Fantastique? Yeah. Magazine from the 80s, great magazine, which was the bastion of entertainment journalism integrity.
Yes.
They refused to sell their reviews. They were ad-free, so they didn't have to worry about advertisers.
Right, they got paid through subscription only.
The cover price, that's why they had a higher cover price than any of their competitors, because it was all content on every page.
But it was stuff that you could trust, too, for that reason.
And then that's why they went out of business. The studio started to say, you're not playing ball. You're not giving us, you know, we gave you an exclusive set visit and then you shit all over our movie. Well, you don't get exclusive. We're going to give those to Starlog, who's willing to just rewrite our press releases for us as articles. And so Cinema Fantastique started to fall behind. And they were losing all the good scoops. They couldn't review movies from preview screenings. They couldn't review it till the movie came out, which on their printing schedule meant they weren't getting the review out till it's on video, because they were a bi-monthly magazine. So basically they said, journalistic integrity kind of cost us the magazine.
But I have a feeling that those involved in Cinema Fantastique, and I didn't know any of them,
You have to say, Cinema Fantastique. Some of the ex-writers insist on you pronounce the Fantastique.
I think that those involved with Cinema Fantastic. I think that they could walk out of a bankrupt or I can't really say failed. I would say financially
unfeasible
magazine with their heads held high.
That still doesn't pay your rent, does it?
No, it doesn't pay your rent, but to me there's something to that. I'd like to find a nice little middle ground where I can go, hey, these people are my sponsors, but... they could walk away with their heads held high, and I see that mattering less and less, especially in entertainment news, because a lot of, let's face it, a lot of entertainment quote unquote news is, hey, we caught photos of this hot actress and she wasn't wearing panties when she got out of the car.
And see, a lot of places, especially if they do invite press to set visits or you know, any kind of a like the opening of a movie or something,
yeah,
they warn, and I use that word specifically, warn all of the cast, the crew, things like that. Press on set. Be on your best behavior.
Yes, I've seen that.
So instead of just acting like you would normally act, you have to put on a false face because the press might see what's going on.
Exactly.
And like, you know, between setups on a movie, they might turn the lav mics off where they normally wouldn't if press was not there.
Right.
And that's the, it used to be, that's how the press got some of like the infighting and who was fucking who and all that, because they were just there. What do you think about the sneak journalism in the film industry, like what Film Threat used to do?
Okay.
Chris Gore, because he got into a specific fight with one of the press agents for a certain film company, he and Film Threat were banned from any of their film sets. So he snuck onto the set of Night of the Living Dead 1990, even got hired as a featured extra zombie, and met the same girl while he was in zombie makeup that banned him, and she didn't recognize him. Chris Gore is actually in the movie. He's one of the people eating Tom after the truck blows up.
See, and to me,
that you just don't do anymore, can you?
You just don't. I mean, a lot of people look and they look at that. It's kind of a weird little duality because they look at that and they go, well, that's horrible journalism. That's terrible. You shouldn't do that. But then the hard journalist that goes across the seas and gets embedded with
the front line
guys or the journalist who goes, I'm going to go to an Al-Qaeda camp and apply as a member of Al-Qaeda. And then it's a huge undercover, wow, they should be just handed medals for this shit.
Right.
And it's a weird little duality where I can see people looking at entertainment news and going, well, that's slimy. And then they look at something.
The same thing. Well, it even comes down to just stupidity sometimes. Remember fucking Geraldo Rivera? We are here right now. Remember his live stupid on that? For those that don't remember, he was live on Fox News.
Yeah.
Right before the U.S. military was about to stage a secret attack.
Right.
And he points out on a map, live on TV, which Al-Qaeda is able to watch, we are here right now. Yeah. Well, let's just say he was ejected from the country very, very fast.
Yes.
And he calls himself a journalist. And you know what? That's the Geraldo Rivera is the ultimate cautionary tale. He used to be a journalist.
You look at the shit
he did in the 70s and the early 80s before he went tabloid.
Yes.
He was a journalist, dude.
Yeah, he was.
And then he got sucked in by the tabloids.
And then, yeah, he got sucked in by the tabloids, by the talk shows, by, you know, Al Capone's vault.
that was still even a little bit down the line from when he started tabloiding. But that brings us to, what about something like The Inquirer or something, or Star and People? I mean, okay, here I am defending cinema fantastique and whatnot as journalism, but at the same time, I don't consider People journalism.
See,
is that a problem with me or with the term?
I think there's been a change. Because if you look back into the early 80s and you look at, we'll call them reputable entertainment news magazines like People and some of the, and to some extent Life magazine amongst others. And it was still journalism. It was still them going in, doing the research, doing their thing.
Not just going through the garbage of Britney Spears to see what drugs she threw away.
And for some reason, somewhere on the late 80s, early 90s, there was a switch. There are magazines that I respect, like Life magazine back, you know, it's not being published anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless it came back.
But Life magazine, they did their work. And it was, there were some fluff pieces and there were some hard-hitting pieces.
There was a relative balance.
Either way, they did their work. And I respect magazines like that. I also respect magazines, strangely, like the Weekly World News. Now, the reason I respect the Weekly World News...
Do you guys know how hard it is to come up with that kind of shit on a weekly basis?
Exactly. This is a magazine that just makes it up, makes absolutely no bones about it.
The Onion.
Yeah, The Onion. Well, The Onion is a satire.
I think Weekly World News can be called satire as well, even if they might not consider themselves such.
I don't know. I think they're just straight up fiction. But you know, to come up with this stupid crap and you know, even those that wrote the Weekly World News were like, yeah, we love going to the grocery store and watching people believe what's on our front page.
Okay, and I'm not changing the subject. You ever see the movie Stephen King's Night Flyer?
No.
It was a HBO original movie from like 96.
Okay.
Miguel Ferrer works for one of those Weekly World News type papers.
Okay.
And I've had certain people that used to work at the real one that said, that's almost kind of how it worked. I mean, they're like, that was clearly... The screenwriter some research on how those offices operated.
But my point is, I respect both of those types of magazines. Those that do their own work, yeah, they may come up with a fluff piece or something really easy to cover, but they do their own work. They do their own research. And Weekly World News, they do their own work. They create their own stories, their own fictions.
But do you think something like people like, oh, Brad and Jen are having trouble? Is that actual news?
See, it's hard for me. Honestly, it's hard for me to judge because I don't care. I mean, Star Magazine, Us Weekly, stuff like that. People, I look, and when I'm at work, I often have to count those magazines. And
I only read them if I'm at the dentist waiting room or something.
Yeah, I just don't care. It just... absolutely no interest whatsoever. So it's hard for me to judge.
Well, in our last couple of minutes, then let's talk about credibility. Once it's gone, do you think it's something you can get back? Like, can CBS get back the credibility? Because I thought they couldn't after the whole Bush-Dan Rather fiasco. But then look at like what Time Magazine did. Remember when they made O.J. Blacker? Remember that?
Yes.
For those that don't remember... Newsweek and USA Today had the same photo that Time did, but Time added stubble and darkened the photo to make OJ look more in, you know, what turned out from the memo, menacing.
Yes.
And that was it for Time. They lost all their credibility because they wanted to make OJ blacker.
Right.
Is credibility something that it's like virginity? When it's gone, it's gone?
For most people, yes. I think that the regaining of credibility is extremely rare, because if I'm working with somebody that just doing my job counting shit, and I find out on one job that they made up their figures, and when we're based on the amount of stuff that we count,
it'll taint everything.
Yeah,
even if it's only a tangential amount, it's still tainted.
Suddenly I go, now I have to look at all the jobs you've done, and we may have to reschedule, you know, because we have a lot financially at stake for the companies that we work for. And in my business, reputation is everything. Reputation of accuracy is everything. And so, no, in my company, once you lose your credibility, you're gone. Journalistically, I think it takes years, at least a decade. Because
now,
you know, you move into a new place and you've always got that one station that's kind of a joke. There's always that one station, and it differs by market, but it's that, and people listening are going, oh, yeah, well,
I've got that one in my market.
That one is blah. Nobody believes them. And, well, why does nobody believe them? It's probably because of something they did in the 80s, 90s, maybe early 2000s. But once you lose it, it takes decades to get it back.
And you know what? I'm going to cap this off with a bitch about Fox News. Fox News, as Fox News Channel, they know they're not journalists. They don't call them like video journalists anymore.
No, they don't.
They call them correspondents.
Yes.
They're the only one of the major news organizations that does not use the term journalist, which says right there, why do you trust them then? Why do so many people in America trust Fox News when they don't even consider themselves credible?
To me,
that's just a willful ignorance, but whatever.
Well, there's something to be said for willful ignorance. Sometimes people go, if you don't
Fox agree, News tells you what you want to hear.
Exactly. There are a lot of people in this country that say, if you don't agree with me, you're lying.
Yeah, I actually do run into that a lot.
And it's a, and I've seen you do it.
No.
I have seen you do it.
No, I say I don't believe you until I look into it. That's not the same thing. It's I don't just believe you. I need to check into it myself.
And I think that that's what they're playing up on. Anyway.
We got to wrap up.
Thanks a bunch for joining us, everybody. We will
buy
see you guys next time.
Buy a t-shirt.
Or maybe not. Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.